Dee, do you want to call the meeting to open session at 4:26?
Call the meeting to order for Ocean's open session at 4:26.
We will do a roll call. Trustee Hanacek.
Here.
Trustee Parham.
Here.
Trustee Perry.
Here.
Trustee Pritchard.
Present.
Trustee Vickers.
Here.
Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Motion to adopt the agenda.
Actually, before we go there, I'd like to pull item 9. We've got some updated information from OCPE Legal today that changes the way we can proceed, and I'll share that with the board later in item number 7.
So, a motion for approval?
And I'll second the amended.
Okay.
And I second the amendment. Okay,
aye. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Is there a report on closed session?
No report on closed session.
Okay. You want to do your report?
Yeah, executive director's report. Yep. All right. First thing I just want to say is I'm going to apologize for how much coughing I'm going to do. I got over COVID like 5-6 weeks ago, and this is the lingering thing. So the more I talk, the worse it gets. So I will.
You need a mint.
I will do my
mint.
I got a pocket full of cough drops, so I'll be popping those, and I got my water.
We'll
so.
Politely look away while you choke
together
there.
Sorry. Have your mask for once.
Yeah. So I'll stay over here with my guys and stay away from y'all. So. Yeah.
Thanks.
Nicole, my buddy.
It goes this way, though, Nicole. It's not going this way.
I'll keep looking down. So I have a few different items. First one, I just wanted to throw out a reminder of the Swallows Day Parade coming on the 23rd. It's in a couple of weeks on Saturday. If you would like to walk with us in the parade, we would love to have you. They do keep pretty strict control over the numbers of people that we have in our parade. So if you would like to come, if you could let us know as soon as possible so that we make sure we have enough students to represent fully, but then we don't go over our allotment so they don't get fussy with us. Let's see, second item I have for you, so just want to report on a couple of student ventures that we have going on coming up. So we're real proud that we have 50 HOSA, Hospital Occupation Student Association students, going to the HOSA event, which includes Laguna Beach students as well. So that's coming up over spring break. So that's here local Long Beach. So we'll be going up to compete again. As you remember, last year we had about 60 kiddos that went to Sacramento and did really well. So I fully expect us to represent our program strong again this year. And then we have Virtual Enterprise, again, qualifying to go to New York to the competitions there. So we had three companies within the classroom that teacher created, and two of the three qualified to go forward this year. So again, very excited about that. And they go first part of April to that event. So always great to see our kids doing well and getting those opportunities to get out and show the rest of the world what we're capable of. Next, I want to give you an update on the career fair, and I was going to let Nicole cover that for us.
Very excited. So I think Kathy passed out a copy of our flyer, but this is the flyer that we're using to promote the first ever CUSD career fair in partnership with CCA. So on the back is a list of our exhibitors. We have about 70 exhibitors that are participating, including every branch of the military, and then 5 different community colleges in the region that will be showcasing their career education opportunities to students. And these are the exhibitors that we have signed up. As of today, we had 595 students RSVP to attend the event. It's going to be hosted on March 18th, that's a Monday, at San Juan Hills High School from 5 to 7. We're using their gym much like the college fair. And then students will have an opportunity to walk around, meet new vendors, learn about different industries. As you know, there's 15 industry sectors that we follow in our pathways, and we made sure to have representation from every single industry. So students will be able to explore all the industries, and then they also have an opportunity to bring a copy of their resume. And we've partnered up with Futurology, and they can drop their resume off for review and then pick it back up with an attached feedback sheet with feedback on how to update and strengthen their resume. And we've also shared this with Laguna Beach as well, so they're aware of the career fair, and your students are, of course, welcome to attend. But yeah, things are moving along smoothly, so I'm really excited for the event and hoping that we have a nice turnout. It's something that we can continue to host.
And Nicole, just logistics, that school is challenging. You're going to have maybe a couple people out there. Just keep the people going because they get in there and get confused or where to park.
Absolutely. So we have the lot at San Juan Hills, which has about 500 and just shy of 600 parking spaces. Right. And then we also reserved a backfill lot at Ascensia, and we've hired security to guard that lot.
Okay.
And then we also have our CTE ambassadors, our career guidance specialists, and our CCA staff that will be on site to guide folks, welcome our exhibitors, provide information.
We have a shuttle bus that we've hired from CUSD to run back and forth between Ascensia and the school.
Great, yeah, because it's challenge. Thank you.
So if you can be there, please join us.
Is this for any adult students or just high school students?
This is for high school students. We have shared it with our CCA adult student programs, but right now our target audience is really for juniors and seniors.
Do you know if these exhibitors will they be talking about careers? Are they going to offer internships?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have some partners that do offer internships. Mm-hmm. But we have the motto of inspire and hire. So if you're not hiring, then you're inspiring students. So just telling them about the industry, and then if they are hiring, they're going to be noted on the table that this is a vendor that's hiring. So if students want to dress professionally, bring a resume, then they'll have an opportunity to talk to somebody from that company and see what possibilities there are.
Like OC Harley's coming. They don't have any openings, but
right.
Try to get kids to our auto kids to think about other kind of careers within the automotive, loosely, right, career area. So should be a lot of fun.
I'm excited. We got a lot of great vendors, like I said, that run the gamut. So
yeah, tons of work. Do we have anybody else, Becca? I know you told me Gunal just contacted us and said they backed out. Anybody else know of note?
No, but we added, so we made space because we shared it with the cities, and then the cities were interested in joining. So we have the city of Aliso, Laguna Niguel, and San Clemente that are joining us now. So,
yeah. Cool. Okay. Awesome. And then you've heard me talk a couple of times about the ICANN program, and we were training our ambassadors, our student ambassadors, to go down to the elementary schools and begin to offer after-school ICANN camps and even train the staff maybe a little bit on some of the equipment if should they would like to come. So just wanted to again give you a quick update on that, where we're at with on the progress of getting our kids out into the schools. And once again, that's a program that Nicole runs for us. I'll let her take over.
Yeah, so we started training our CTE ambassadors in December on the ICANN kits. So if you haven't seen them, they've got the Spheros and the RoboCars that the students learn to program and code. They can learn how to code Marty the robot and have them walk and dance, that sort of thing. So we reached out to our ambassadors and asked if they would be interested in being trained, and then we would connect them with an elementary school teacher. And so we trained about, I want to say 15 ambassadors. Some couldn't meet the day that we did training, but we were able to connect 6 of our ambassadors with 6 of our elementary school sites. So Don Juan, Wood Canyon, Hidden Hills, Moulton, Vista Del Mar, and Del Obispo. They have already connected with their ambassador, so the ambassador has already been on site and worked with that elementary school teacher to support the students in the ICANN lab. And then we have 2 school sites, San Juan and Canyon Vista, that have upcoming dates to meet with their ambassador. And then we have 2 more that we're trying to connect, Ascensia and Wagon Wheel. So
your goal is to hit 10. All elementaries. Mm-hmm. So the ones that you're hearing from or whatever, you're reaching out to them to they might be overwhelmed or whatever.
Right. So we reached out to all elementary school sites and we asked for their availability. So some were either not prepared to start meeting in the lab, or their availability did not align with an ambassador's availability, so we couldn't make a match. So we'll continue our efforts, and again, when we roll this out next year, again, we'll start with all 23 sites, and hopefully we'll make more connections. But
we'll continue to work with TIS, so the schools that aren't ready to implement the ICANN lab, continue to work with EdTech from CUSD site and support those schools to get everybody up and running.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Nicole, was Laguna included in that?
Laguna ambassadors were invited to participate in the training, mm-hmm. but I don't have not any of the Laguna mm-hmm. elementary school site.
Yeah, that was a CUSD program that we were supporting.
Okay,
yeah.
Yep. Well, let me know when you hit Palisades. I'll walk up there and okay. take pictures
okay.
for your website.
Okay, so the next update I have for you, just to let you know we've been going through a pretty significant computer refresh on the CUSD side of things in our CTE courses, so just want to let everybody know that our last round of secondary computers are sitting in the warehouse, so TS is working on rolling those out. Those are the Mac Labs. We had to hold on that because Mac came out with a new operating system kind of right in the middle of the process, so we didn't want to buy out-of-date equipment right out of the gate, so we held off on that. TIS is going to do the majority of those installs over spring break. There's a couple they're going to do in the summer because the teachers do some very specific things that this new computer system is going to cause them to have to change, and we want to disrupt their instructional flow during the year. So they opted to wait and finish off those installs over the summer. But that's moving forward. So I had a few updates from the state on some new bills and such. Just wanted to run them by you so you'll hear them. I'll continue to update you guys in Friday notes when there are changes on these. Some of them were interesting, though. So AB 2019, they changed the definition of middle college to include programs that are offered within the high school walls. So typically, a middle college is when kids go to the community college campus and exists there, so that definition has been changed to allow for some more innovation to happen at the school site. AB 2019. Yep. And then AB 2097 looks like it is calling for computer science to be a graduation high school requirement at all schools. So wasn't a lot of back information on that one. Actually, wasn't
what was
a lot
it,
of 2097.
Awesome.
Then we have AB 2245. So this is one that we're paying particular attention to, and I've shared this one with you guys before. Similar bills have been introduced the last 2 years, so this is the third year in a row, would seek specifically to convert ROP teachers to permanent employees after they meet the set requirements. So that is troubling for a lot of reasons. You know, it's kind of the heart of CTE is to have folks that are close to industry that have recency. The recency experience is actually part of getting their credential. So it's interesting that it kind of flies against some of the other policy that the state already has. So we'll continue to track that and see how that progresses.
When you say permanent teaching, so it means that then they would be able to be a teacher
They would be tenured, so would no longer be at will employees the way they are now. So they would have full tenure rights, just like a district teacher would.
Would they have to stay in CCA, or they're a teacher wherever?
They would have to stay ROP employed. They wouldn't be able to convert into a math teacher or something like that, because that would be credential based. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, I was just wondering. You know, they're always trying to figure out, not for our school district,
right,
but the teacher shortage. So they're always kind of looking for, you know, through ways to get people more streamlined.
Yes. Can you make a note and let me get that back to him? Oh, you know what? I took a picture of the slide. I can probably tell you. 2045, if I can see my new glasses. Carrillo. Member Carrillo.
Is that the same person bringing it back for the third year, or is it different?
This is a different person from the one I was familiar with last year. Okay, three more real quick bills here. So we have AB 3131. So this would seek to give districts priority status in funding from CTIG and K-12 Strong Workforce if they are from historically redlined areas.
Yeah. Okay, well, apply to us.
So we'll see where that one goes. This next one is really intriguing. It's not so much for ROP, possibly, but I thought I would share it with you nonetheless. AB 480, and it is titled the Korean Meister High School's Pilot Program, whereby they're seeking, the way the little bit of language on the slide that we had, that they would seek three LEAs from a geographically diverse area across the state to participate, and students would go to school 3 days a week and go to work 2 days a week. Mm, and districts would be...
So it's a Korean model,
yeah.
Educational model?
Yeah. And then LEAs would be absolved of attendance down pitfalls from students not being in. If you're in the program, that wouldn't count against you, they said. And so that was something they're going to continue to flesh out. But it sounded really interesting because it's what we're all about, internships and getting kids those opportunities and getting out.
Unless they're targeting farm communities.
Which areas are they looking at? Yeah. Which three areas?
They didn't say. They didn't have any of that. This was just it was a one-slide quick report. Yeah. And then the last one, they don't have a number to it yet. They had ABXXX, right? And it was a pilot program to pay students for internships. And this came up in the state convening for the first meeting they had for the master plan. Superintendent Thurman was leading that. And lots of questions. They broke us out into subgroups on Zoom, and we were talking. And a lot of the conversation was about, hey districts, you've got all this money. What money can you leverage to pay for this? So they came up with a great idea and a great bill, but I don't think they have any money behind that one currently. So we'll see what happens with that. Because we did some quick math when we were in there, and the number is astronomical to be able to do that statewide. Yeah, it's craziness. Let's see, a couple more things from as far as state updates go. This is a really cool website, so sorry this is a little bit aside, but it's just straight up fun and interesting. It's on the map, one word, onthemap.ces.census.gov, and I'll send this out so you know, write it down. But what it does, it lets you put in a zip code for a city, and then it'll show, there's all kinds of reporting that you can do. It shows you how many people live there and work there, and then how many people live there and go work somewhere else, and how many people don't live there but come in and work. So geographically, you can really pare it down and look at it. And just from a school board member perspective, I thought that might be something you guys would be interested in playing around with and checking out. But I'll email you out the link to that. That was kind of fun. State continues to warn about possible significant reductions in grant funding. So this came out of the California Partnerships Academy grant session that I attended. They spoke for about 30 minutes, and about the last 10 minutes of it was how much you need to be prepared to not get your full amounts and all the doom and gloom, you know, as it went. So, again, don't have any specifics or hard data on, you know, anything that they're suggesting, but they were nervous enough from whatever they're being told from their state counterparts that they passed all that along to us. So I just wanted to share that. Perkins, the state underwent a federal Perkins review, and there is some discrepancy in what the state requires for pathway completers versus what the Fed requires. So the Fed requires two sequential courses, and then the state layered on 300 hours. And when the Fed made a change, well, initially they were in line with each other, and the Fed made a change, the state didn't make that same change. So they were incongruent with one another. So the state's currently going through the process that they actually have to resubmit the state plan to the Fed with that change in language. So the new language to be a pathway completer will be a CTE student who completes at least two sequential courses in an industry pathway, and the sequence includes a capstone course, and the CTE student receives a grade of C minus or better in that course.
A C minus or better?
Yeah.
But no 300 hours?
But no hours. That's the piece that left. Yeah. Which is actually, it will help a lot of people because a lot of the school schedules are actually difficult to do that. So it's not the worst thing in the world, but it opens some other doors that unscrupulous LEAs may take advantage of. We would absolutely not do that. But and then, as you guys, I'm sure you're aware of this, when the language in the trailer bills that came out around the elementary CTE credential for teaching of dance and theater and drama. Any current CTE, the proposal that came out was any current CTE teacher that would want to go through an additional 24 hours of training at the elementary level can get an add-on certification to be able to teach at the elementary level, one of those four areas.
That's to probably fulfill the arts proposition that they can't get anybody.
They can't get people, yeah. They force everybody to spend 90... Yeah. Was it 80% of the money on people, but then there aren't any people. So this is the backfill.
So this is their back-end way of getting. Right. So a CTE, so me, let's say I'm a CTE person, mm-hmm. with extra effort, then I could get a job teaching one of those VAPA courses at an elementary.
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Yep. And then the other requirement was a two-year mentorship for that person once they're in place by an elementary school teacher to help with learning the elementary way of life for the little kids. So, so a couple more updates here. Just wanted to give you an update on the parent night that we had at Marco Forrester in support of the Robotics Academy, the Middle School Foundations grant that we got. So we had about 20, I think it was 21 families that went with us. So we had a quick meeting at the school. Ms. Gonzalez was able to show them the lab and some of the equipment that the kids have at the middle school, what goes on there. And then we got on a bus and headed over to Capitol Valley High School. So it was the night that the Robot Dolphins were packing up to go to competition. So thankfully, they waited to pack until after we left. So that was very gracious of them. But they ran the new robot. Every single person had their phone up, and they were taking videos almost the entire time. It was really, really well done by the robot. And the kids did it, not the teachers so much. The teachers just talked just for a minute. We showed them the engineering lab, we showed them the fab lab, and we showed them the practice field. So got a lot of kids energized and excited about it. So I talked to the teachers yesterday, and the counselor that went with us, and they said they did get a handful of registrations for the class for kiddos that had already registered for something else, and they changed their mind and they want to be a part of the academy. So it was a night well spent just based on that alone. There are a few new grants, that we're going to turn in applications for. First is the Golden State Pathways grant. So I'm sure you're aware of that one. That's $500 million the state has set aside to put out. So we're going to write a grant for one pathway for each one of our high schools that we support. And those total that you can ask for is $500,000. What you wind up getting funded, we'll have to wait and see. That is one that I sent out to you guys before. We don't qualify, neither district qualifies for any of those criteria that they say you've got to qualify for one of these to get funded. But we know LEAs have been funded that also did not satisfy any of those. So we're going to go ahead and turn it in, and we'll see what happens if enough people...
Can you put tears on the ground?
Something, right? Exactly. Exactly. We've got some... I think we've got a real good shot. I think we're going to put together a really good application and be very compelling. So it wouldn't surprise me if we got a little bit of money from that, but we'll just have to wait and see. State changed the rules on CCAP grants. So now ROPs are allowed to submit for a CCAP grant. So we're going through that application. We're going to take a look at that. And we fully intend on putting together, again, another good application. And that will really support our growth into our dual enrollment areas. We're working towards bringing two dual enrollment programs online for next year. So this would that would go a long way into supporting that work. So we're going to continue that.
Before you go on.
Yes, sir.
For those who haven't been on the support, could you go through what a CCAP is versus a dual enrollment?
Yes.
Can you talk right now, please? Because I've got to get going. I'm just kidding.
Sorry. When I talk more, it gets worse. I'm so sorry. So I'm trying to go fast.
Thanks, Gary.
So CCAP agreements are for agreements between, well, there's two things, a CCAP agreement and then a CCAP grant. So it is creating an agreement with a community college to basically pave the way for students to be able to access dual enrollment and college credits in ways that you typically wouldn't be able to do so. So some of the comments that Dr. Brown was making before we left about working with the colleges and looking on that throughput, and breaking down some of those barriers, whether it be process, whether it be dollars for materials and books and things like that. Through CCAP, we can do away with a lot of those barriers for kids to really make that a more streamlined, seamless process for them to be able to get in. The RFA for the Middle School Foundations Academy grant, the one like what we have at Marco, came out just the other day, a couple days ago. And so we will submit for Marco for the implementation grant. So that was a two-part grant. You get year one is a planning grant. They give you $25,000 for that one. And then year two, you get a implementation grant. You can get up to $50,000 for the implementation grant. So we'll submit for that. For Marco, we will also submit the second grant that we submitted last year that they didn't want to fund two in the same district, so they had us pull one. So we pulled the one with the lower rubric score, to be fair. But we're going to resubmit that one in hopes that it passed last year, so in hopes it would pass again this year for Shorecliffs to try to tie their culinary program to the culinary program at San Clemente High School.
I appreciate that. They need some hooks.
Yeah, they got that great new kitchen,
yeah,
so we could really use that money to do other things to really push that program forward, because the equipment's already in great shape, so we can really make some ground there. So hopefully they'll allow us to have two, not being in the same year, being funded. So we'll see. I wanted to address pulling the resolution from the agenda. So we were questioning process, legal process, in terms of dealing with certified probationary staff members. I'm sorry?
Classified.
I said certified. Sorry. Thank you. Classified staff members, in terms of whether seniority played a part in dealing with any potential reductions. And while it does for CUSD per contract, it does not in terms of legal standing for ROP when you don't have a union contract in place. So we got that clarification from OCDE Legal this morning. So that's why I wanted to pull that off, because that changes the way we're going to be able to address it. It actually protects CCA from having, if you were to remove or lay off someone, then you have 39 month requirement to give them the opportunity to come back for a job that they would be qualified to have. So it puts us on the hook to potentially have to bring somebody back in a situation where we might not believe that they're the best fit, but they would be able to make an argument that they were, and lay claim to a job up to 39 months down the road. So doing it, having the opportunity to handle that situation in a different way, takes that off the table, and thereby protecting us down the road up to 39 months to be able to make the best decision versus a forced decision.
So if you pull it, then you don't vote on that until you bring it back?
If we brought it back, but in this case, we'll be able to bring it back in a different way,
yeah,
and handle it in a different way. So we would restructure that just a little bit, regardless. And we'll actually, when we get to number seven, I'll be able to talk through that. It'll be a little clearer. But I just want to share with you why we pulled that one. So, all right, that's it for my report. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have had no public comments. So we can move on to the consent calendar. Does anybody want to pull anything?
I don't have anything.
Okay. I have a correction on the minutes for December 20th.
Okay.
That Dr. Kelly didn't arrive until 10 o'clock. Somehow it didn't reflect that. I mean, it says he was there under the first second book, since we started at 9:03. Thought
that
he started at 10, so.
Oh, okay.
He arrived at 10.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
So I can correct those?
Yes.
Okay. Can we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
And a roll call, Trustee Hanacek?
Aye.
Trustee Parham?
Aye.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Trustee Pritchard?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Okay, moving on to discussion action items. Paul, you're up.
Okay, me again. I get to keep talking. Jeez. Okay, fiscal planning and updates. So, traditionally, second interim is first in the meeting, so I want to be 100% transparent in sharing with you that I'm going to outline some recommendations for tightening up a little bit for next year, and those recommendations are reflected in the projection portion of second interim. So I didn't want you guys to look at second interim and vote on something prior to having this conversation. So that's why we flipped a little bit and I'm going first, so that you have all the information you need to make those decisions as you choose. So that being said, so staff have been evaluating our revenues and our expenses to determine, and have determined that we need to make some reductions in order to ensure the smooth operations of CCA over the next few years. With this climate of declining enrollment and decreases in our core operational grants and funding, and the state warning of further cuts to come in our core foundational fund, I call foundation our funding, our CTIG grants, our primary funding that we count on the bulk of those monies each year. And the state keeps telling us that those are going to go down and down. as they have been over the last few years. We feel that it's fiscally responsible to propose some targeted reductions. So the primary reason for reductions there that that our expenditures have been going up is with our salaries and benefits. So in 2018, our salaries and benefits combined were just over $2 million. They were like $2,097,000 and some change. In 2022, we rose to about $4.7 million. And then in 2023, it went up to 5.2, which is where we're currently at. So those are some pretty significant increases. While our CTIG funding has been going down each year, and the forecasted, for example, this year, health and benefits went up, 23% this year. So when those kind of things keep happening, we're going to continue to go further and further in a hole in terms of having enough money to be able to operate, not only from a budgetary standpoint, but from a cash flow standpoint, which are two vastly different things. We've become overly reliant on the competitive grants, K-12 grants, and K-12 every year stands up in front of us and says, be careful, you know, counting on this money from year to year to year. We may or may not get it. One of the examples they love to give us is, you know, if we have too many agencies that submit a grant in one industry sector, we can choose not to fund half of them, even though they have a qualifying score, because we want to spread that out across all industry sectors. And that's a blind spot that they would hit an LEA with, and they've done it before. It happened to two other LEAs where they literally didn't get funded anything in a given year, even though they were funded very well the year before. Something like that would be devastating to our budget. So I wanted to try to put us on a path to where, should something like that happen from the state, that it doesn't have a significantly catastrophic impact on our ROP. So this year we have about a $300,000 cash flow gap to get us through to the end, based on when the state is telling us that they're going to be able to deliver the first round of our grant funds for this year. So that being K-12 Strong Workforce. Last update meeting we went to, they said it could be as late as May 1st before we get that. The initial language that we get from them is late February, 1st of March, and then they just keep pushing it back and back and back. So we'd like to be able to trim enough to be able to cover our cash flow gap that seems to come around each year because of the timing issues with the state. We'd like to get into a position where we don't have to worry about the state. If they're a month or two or three late, it's okay, because we have that targeted set aside in place so that we can cover that with no issues. And nobody likes to be right on a zero budget, right? So we need to have a little bit of extra leeway. So if an auto lift shoots craps, that can be up to $200,000 to be able to replace that any given year. And those will sneak up on you out of nowhere. So we'd like to be able to have a little bit of additional funding that we can push forward in terms of an actual set-aside reserve, so that we can accommodate any of those kind of issues that should arise from time to time, because they always do.
So just for kind of clarification.
Yes, ma'am.
So this is kind of a standard, because the way the timing is for you. So this is something that's not necessarily new, to be have this shortfall.
Correct.
So what you're looking at is trimming, instead of depending on past practices, maybe of taking with CUSD against your two. Tied you, isn't that how we did it before?
Correct. Yeah, we're going to, I was a little bit late.
Oh, I'm sorry,
we're actually going to have to do that this year, because okay. We're in that same position. We're 200 in the last number, and the number changes as we get little dribbles of our we have about $1 million in receivables sitting out there. You know, the state only gives us 90% of CTIG, and they gave you 10% later. So that 10% and the 30% that K-12 hangs on to, that sprinkles throughout the course of the year, so it fluctuates. The last numbers that Mel shared with me, we were about $280,000 is what our shortfall was going to be.
Okay.
So we will need to work with CUSD to do an advance on the pass-through that they give us.
Yeah.
So we're just basically paying ourselves early on that one. Yeah. I have a meeting scheduled with Dr. Brown on Monday to have that discussion. So yes, it is. It's common practice. I know at the CBO meeting we went, I know CUSD does it as a matter of practice. They shared a whole big old list of all the districts, so it's common practice for most LEAs, because the state, they'd rather hang on to that much money for an extra month or two to get the interest so they get it and everybody else doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So we have four pieces to our proposal that I want to share with you. So first piece would be a reduction, and this is where the pulling of the item falls in. So we propose that we reduce our career guidance specialist numbers. We have 6 of them currently, 1 place at each one of the CUSD high schools. We propose that that goes to 3, so that each one of the CGSs shares between 2 schools. That's the way we had the process running year before last. The schools, we had full coverage for the schools. We can schedule in the times where they do have conflicts, say around registration. That's when the rest of the team steps in and covers those few times where there is something going on at both schools. Normally, we're able to schedule things around, and they consult us too when they do that to make sure that our folks can get to all of the different events and fully support the school.
And I did, knowing you were, doing 1, I don't know where it was coming from, I did check in with my local high school, just to, you know, how's it going with career guidance? They actually haven't had one for a while. And then that was that particular principal's suggestion, if you have to go to 1 for sharing with 2 schools.
Yes, yep.
Even though the value is definitely there and recognized, so thank you all,
100%.
You know, for building that program. And it was, you know, he definitely confirmed that they're busy, they're needed, it's high level stuff. But if we have to do it, don't totally get rid of them, but let you know. But he has been dealing without 1.
We've actually had 1 of them that's been going over.
Yeah, they're showing up. That could be his problem. I don't know what's happening there. So there's that.
Yeah, we can double check on that. Okay. But yeah, I had a conversation with him about that a few days back as well. So yes, absolutely. But that would be the intent, is they would be assigned to 2 schools and they would share between. So they'd be able to schedule. They'd be able to coordinate with the guidance offices, so everybody would know exactly when they're going to be there. And if something special is coming up and they got to switch the schedule, then switch the schedule to support.
And the futurology representative is always there.
Is separate, and I believe they're always there.
They're always there.
Do they have full 6 or do they have 5?
They have 7.
They have 7.
That's
excuse
7.
Me.
Yeah.
They just hired 1 for the early college.
Oh, that's right. For the new school.
For us, recognize those are the CUSD funded folks.
Yes.
Okay.
So that would be 1. And yes, we had a resignation from that position a while back. That individual got a job in Oceanside where her spouse was working and where they live. They just bought a house, so that was why that they left. And that was a former employee of that same school, so that connection was super, super tight. A lot of good work going on there. We have 1 position where things are just not going the way they need to go, and we've been documenting that, and we'll take care of that at the end of the year. And then we have the 3rd position that we were looking at, and that's where the change came with the seniority piece of classified personnel. So until we got that answer, we were not going to be able to take action with the position that we were intending to. We were going to have to do it a different way, and that was forcing us to do the layoff instead. But given the update from OCDE, now we don't have to do the layoff like I explained, and we can protect the organization from having to carry a 39-month note basically on a future employee. So that's why we pulled that one off, and that's how that all ties into to this proposal. We have some additional, the 2nd item, we have some COVID-funded dollars that were going directly to staff. So my predecessor put in a protocol for staff to be paid additional plan and prep time above and beyond what's built into their current salaries as a way to get additional dollars into their hands from the COVID relief money, which was great. Great opportunity for our teachers to honor the work that they do. But those dollars are expended, so those are not funds that we can pull from anywhere else to be able to continue those actual, I won't call them stipends, but those supplementary funds to the teachers. So those funds will no longer be able to be given to the staff, so that's a 2nd piece of the reduction.
Will they continue to do that work?
We have time built into their normal hours that they get for plan and prep time. So these dollars were over and above what was already built in. So there was a way to basically, I don't know, this is not a great representation, but basically a way to give teachers a bonus while we had the money. So it was above and beyond what they are already getting prior and what they will continue to get beyond this. That won't change their core pay, and the extra time that's built in for them for planning is a part of their regular pay. This was
so it wasn't any extra time they were doing. It was just a supplemental bonus.
Supplemental money for them, yeah.
Okay, but and so it's, they're still going to do do the work and have the appropriate compensation
correct.
Built in.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, this won't touch their core pay.
Right. And that, how do you notify them about the schedule?
We'll build that into our staff, our back to school, excuse me, our staff meeting offer when we come back every year. We print offer letters for everybody, and we have all the conversation about any changes and everything that's going on when they choose to accept their offer letters or not.
Yeah. So that wouldn't be a factor in choosing to not come back. It wouldn't be significant, would it, per person?
I can't speak to anybody's individual financial situations, right? Overall, it's not like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. I mean, somebody's not going to take a $15,000 pay cut because of this, but
right. Is
it going to be a couple grand? Yeah, it is. It is.
So, and it's just how you message, too. They're exhausted. The funds are exhausted. They're no longer available.
Yeah. And we've had several conversations about that because there were a lot of there was this wish list was a term you might have heard right back in the day, right? And folks, even after the bulk of the COVID money was gone, they were still turning in things and they were writing wish list on top of it. We had guys, that was a COVID money thing.
We created a dependent population.
Yeah, so
it's
like sugar high for COVID.
That is great. That is a great way to look at it. I love that. So yeah, it's another, and we had some conversations about it this year at our back to staff meeting to let them know, guys, COVID money's gone. So this buy anything you want and going after the, you know, the golden ring. The answer is going to be no. So we've been weaning them back, and they've done a pretty good job this year of finally kind of reining back all the way on that. So it won't be a complete surprise that that's the case. The next item we have, so every year we work with both districts to determine the percentage of pass-through money that we give from our CTIG grant, from our primary funding. So we are going to pull back on the percentage. When I was hired, it was shared with me that that is, the agreement was ultimately that if CCA needed it, that CCA could retain the entire grant if need be. We don't need to do that yet. That will be a conversation for my predecessor, or whoever follows me to work with you guys on determining if that's the case. But I am proposing to hold back an additional 10% for CCA.
From
what we would give to the district from CTIG when the money comes in. Yeah, so we would retain an additional 10%, which still leaves 10% each out into the districts for work that's done on the CTE district side of things. And then the last piece is, honestly, it's nothing new or special, but I just wanted to put it out to you guys so you knew kind of where we were at. Every year we analyze our enrollment numbers, and we have folks that come to us and say, hey, I really don't want to teach that after bell class anymore, or you know, any variation of all of that. So this year, as it stands right now, and anything can change after registration, and it changes again right at the beginning of school when actual schedules get printed for kids and things, we have 6 individual sections that we are targeting to not offer for next year.
And these sections are because of lack of teacher?
Combination of a lot of things. So I'll go through all 6 of them with you right
thanks.
Here so she could be fully aware.
This is the kid part.
This is the kid part.
The touch point to the child.
And we kept this student. Absolutely as small as we could possibly keep it. So we have one section of Capitol Valley High School, which is our dance program we have over there. And every year we talk to the school, and the school commits, yes, we're going to be able to get 2 sections of this. And then it turns into 1 section, and then it turns into 6 kids.
Oh,
and it's been that way the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So this year we started the year with 5. I let them start it again under the promise that we've got a plan, we're going to make it happen. And right after second semester, when the semester change in schedules kind of shook up a little bit, they were able to push a few extra kids in there, and we're up to 14. So that's it's just not enough to be able to continue.
So and we must dance in Capitol.
Yeah.
So what is the expected number? What is
your? It's hard to justify running anything under 20. I'm really good with running lower than what the district runs. Is at 36 is what the district staffs. 36 is too many in our classes for the hands-on nature and safety and, you know, just time on task with kids. A dance teacher needs to be able to have more time with a student to do individualized instruction. So my threshold is I try to hold to 20 as best as I can. In some cases, you fudge for the school, but, you know, to help them out or to keep a program running. But that's kind of that number that we try to work with as best as possible. The second one we have is Mr. I was going to say his name, and I better not say that. Well, I can. This is Mr. Tyson. I turned in his retirement paperwork.
So, where is he?
Good for him. He's at Dana Hills High School. He teaches our multimedia class, our sound engineering class. He's got a couple, three different ones over there. So the interesting thing there is last year the school came to me and it went out and sat down with their scheduler, and they didn't have enough kids enrolled in the class to give him a full schedule. So we went ahead and covered it because he was in the teens. He was in the mid-teens. I said, it's fine. Go ahead. I don't want to pull sections from you guys. Go ahead and run it, and we'll just work on getting some more kids in there. So they already didn't have enough kiddos to actually run his full schedule. So that being said, with him leaving, we're going to reconfigure our offerings a little bit. We're going to move our After Bell fashion design class from Capo after school to Dana after school, because she has a dual credential and she can actually teach some of the same classes that Mr. Tyson teaches. So she'll be able to do the fashion after school, maintain that for our regional program, but then pick up a couple of during the Bell classes of the current content that we do have kids there. We have a couple sections where the kids that want to take that.
The multimedia
and the sound engineering.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in.
And then we're working on another, another teacher to see what the schedule winds up looking like for him, and we may be able to bring him over during the day as well. So our goal is to only trim by one section there and backfill Dana with four sections of not only the multimedia, but add some new content to them as well.
And then a section from Capo leaves because that's after Bell.
Yeah.
But the dance and the multimedia are within the Bell schedule.
Dance is within the Bell, multimedia is within the Bell at Dana.
Does that count against their load? I mean,
there's some conversation. Actually, I have a meeting with Bob Presby tomorrow to have that conversation. I think there are certain situations where it does and certain situations where it doesn't. So I'm not 100% up to speed on how they staff, but I believe in most cases, man, they're going to kill me for saying this, but in most cases, by virtue of CCA coming and offering it during the Bell class, that's an additional section count to the school above their allocation. It's my understanding.
After school
is something different. Yeah, but during the Bell, I believe there's a benefit to having our classes in the Bell for the school.
So they actually benefit from even a low enrolled class gets counted in a particular way that advantages this. I'm sympathetic to your crisis and this sort of thing. And also being an arts dean, I do kind of get a little interested when numbers are thrown around because they are. I mean, not everyone's an artist, right? So your general population is a much smaller kind of segment of people who can do this kind of work.
Yeah.
And none of the board members here, I imagine, would want to be seen as cutting arts programming in any fashion.
We're not cutting. The hope is to actually add a second fashion class during the day.
Yeah.
So she'll do an after Bell. We'll add it during the day fashion, and then she'll teach two multimedias, and that gives us the full four.
Outside of this, I would suggest that being the way that it's discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, not the takeaway, but the.
Yeah. And that one focus on the ad, because that's actually going to benefit. And they have a fantastic theater program at Dana. So having fashion there with that, especially with the teacher that teaches the theater program, that's going to be dynamic.
That's social reality there.
Yeah, that's going to be a dynamic program.
You take away the multimedia sound engineering, they're already chipping away at their social and their arts. Yeah, that would be devastating.
I know.
We couldn't even get anybody to go to school there.
Yeah. Yep. The third section that we're talking about, Ms. Blackledge, she actually let us know that she doesn't want to teach her after Bell section. She's in the medical area, so we will not be...
What class is
this? Capo Valley.
It's Med Corps, right?
Med Corps. She's an after Bell teacher that teaches on the adult campus.
On the adult campus,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But it is for high school students.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Well, but she teaches it, yeah.
I mean, that class, what was the attendance, participation, what's the data on that class? Was it good?
Yeah, it's good. 20. Well attended, more than 20 probably. Yes, more than
20. And what was it again?
Medical Corps.
Okay, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Wow. We're spitballing here.
Yeah. So, she's been with us for a long time.
But the interest, the ability, the desire with her leaving, you just financially feel like you just... let it go?
For now. We'd love, you know, yeah. Our hope is to bring what we can back when we can't. But because she was willing, she didn't want to do it, we were like, okay, well, this isn't hurting anybody. This, you know, we can hopefully bring it back when we can.
Okay.
So our fourth section that we have, Mr. O'Rourke has let us know that he would rather not teach the cybersecurity section during the bell. He wants to maintain his after bell program, and he wants to maintain the aviation program. He just doesn't want to do it during the day any longer.
Does that hurt San Clemente High School then?
Depending on what HR, how they do their thing on the capo side.
And I don't know how many kids are actually attending that class and doing it.
Last several times I've been in his class, it's been pretty low. He had about eight in there the day that we had visitors from Laguna Beach to go over and check out the program. You can always count on two or three kids being absent from, you know, any given class.
That's a cybersecurity lab. Do they still have the Cisco lab over there?
That's in the Cisco lab, yeah.
So it's the same thing. It's the Cisco. So he's only have eight kids that are interested in getting Cisco certification. Yeah, they don't get it.
Yeah.
They literally don't get it.
That's been a tough program to staff. My whole career has been a tough program to staff. Kids, it's not cool and fun, and there's nothing I get to build and take home and show mom.
Well, it means they could go to work, but I guess they don't want to do that.
Are there ever targeted efforts to get funding from some of the local players? I mean, we're kind of in the hub of cybersecurity companies here.
Yeah, I just hooked up a cybersecurity expert with Mr. O'Rourke actually yesterday. She reached out and is a chief information officer at a large private company here in the area. So she wanted to start being a presence in the class. She wanted to come and start talking to the class, and she was talking about maybe being able to do some other things with it. So we'll definitely foster that relationship for the afterbell classes for now, and then if we ever grow into something like that, then absolutely we'd be interested in looking at alternative funding.
Fashion or cybersecurity? Where am I going to make any money? Let me think.
Well, it depends where you work.
That's true.
Yep.
I'm in Vegas.
I'm in Hollywood. Yeah, I'm in Vegas. Yep. I do fashion.
Yep.
Yeah.
So on the after bell schedule, I guess my question would be CCAP agreements and the enrollments. This is where that window of opportunity exists between the two agencies to be more collaborative. Mm-hmm. To figure out a pathway that's not, because eight people in the cybersecurity, these things, there's not enough of them in colleges. And if you had them early trained, we could get a lot further and throw money at them. And it's not like small change either. These people make incredible amounts of money in careers.
So kids can go out making $80,000-$90,000 right out of high school.
Yeah, right out of high school.
Yeah,
right
out of high school. Absolutely. Community college is a lot of demand, right?
Universities, not just community.
And then
every day we're attacked by something.
I don't think people realize that's true.
Enrollment is real iffy with this whole bots thing that we got going on. And I know no one that's got a decent solution. And so other than what we're just keep working on it, but the AI gets smarter every time we figure out something, and then now there's a new way of doing it, and now there's these students that are actually getting like A's in classes that aren't, they stole an identity, they enrolled, they got all the financial aid award, and all they got to do is hit the, you know, the AI response or something does that, an algorithm generates, and all of a sudden the professor's online going, So
this is really, when we look at developing the workforce of tomorrow, this is almost like a necessity that we have to drive young people.
Well, you need a cybersecurity pathway.
Yeah,
like pathway. A law pathway.
Yeah, cybersecurity pathway.
Right, AI is another one that we get to a point where we're building again. AI is one of the first ones that needs to come and be a part of things. And that's the sessions that I went to at the conference. Every single AI session, it was standing room only, and people outside, trying to peer in and hear what's going on to get any little nuggets of something they can to move forward, because that's just going to continue to explode.
We have a career fair just focused on a couple of those types of industries.
Yeah, you can certainly do it. But like I said, everywhere I've ever been, I actually worked at a district where we put together an entire academy, cybersecurity academy. We had a separate building, and we had bus transportation for kids to get over and take it. It was hot the first year because it was brand new and shiny, and then it just died. And it's been a problem everywhere I've ever been.
Okay.
It is hard.
Okay.
It is. But again, it's just that thing that unless you're that kid that's just totally, and I say this with all the love and affection in the world, but unless you're just a computer geek and you love sitting and looking at a computer screen and figuring out code and that's your jam, it's the average kiddo is not going to go in there and check that out and get all turned on by it and say great things as much.
The, I think it's like the arts in that regard because not everybody does that stuff. Everyone likes the idea. But
right.
They like watching the Grammys and doing all this sort of high-profile stuff. But when push comes to shove, you go, Jesus, I can't do this. I don't have, there's a limit. So I don't think you build them large. You build them real streamlined to get people through those things and out into a workforce that's just waiting for that kind of talent.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if we can concentrate, like you said, when we can move on, and then also maybe with this opportunity to have this kind of real-world internship, I mean, talk about how good would that look on your resume as a student, right? Whether you want to go into cybersecurity or not, that is, you're going to stand out amongst everybody else. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just been really frustrating. I've been doing a
collaboration and it's our after-school cybersecurity. Like, we have an adult program, and we added high school to it to make enough students to do it. And so that was kind of a thinking out of the box. And so that's been building, and we've got a good
that's the one class where we have high school kids and college and adults in the same classroom. And we did that solely to have the numbers to be able to justify offering the class. Because even at the adult level, we couldn't get enough people.
That one's still there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully any kids that would have wanted to take it during the day will be able to just take it in the after bell setting. Because it'd still be an opportunity. It'll still be in the, still be on the table for them to be able to enroll in.
We just had a company by the name of Cyber Forward. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but they actually just RSVP'd yesterday to be an exhibitor. So they're not listed here, but you know, we could further connect with them and see what opportunities they have for students or build that relationship. They're a new business partner for us. So.
And hopefully O'Rourke, you know, even the kids, existing kids he has, to get over there and
Well, if he can't build it, you know, you know Mr. O'Rourke, right?
Yeah. Not really.
if Mr. O'Rourke, who
eats
cookies during his class every Friday, has cookies brought in, like, he is the beloved teacher. And if he can't build it, like,
And he also teaches AP Computer Science on the class, so he's in touch with that group of kids.
JROTC is his thing, too.
Former military.
Yeah, from the military. Yeah,
he's a great guy. Everybody loves him.
Everybody loves him. I mean, because a lot of times about the teacher.
And
I believe he has a master's. I think he has a master's. I can't tell you what it's in.
That's Chris Carter.
Because he teaches everything.
If there's somebody on campus that could build a program,
our cybersecurity.
If you did it online of some sort, right? Because almost all that stuff would work.
Change the format.
Yeah, and then you just do it all multi-campus. Like, there's an academy.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But it's an online academy. And it's like you gather all the resources from all
the schools. Virtual cybersecurity academy.
And including the Saddleback faculty, because then you could be faculty.
You know what's a draw for those folks is those hackathons.
My son does those all the time.
People come from all over the country to do different
things. We really rebrand it and make it exciting and try to get the kids in. Because you're right, I mean, there's lots of money in it, but we have tried.
Well, I think Paul's right. It's going to be small because there's not everybody, right? There's a focus there. And then you'd have to go around to enough to get the population that you need to be able to support those classes.
Yeah.
But then to give them college credit on top of that,
I think that's the way forward.
Test or anything, it's literally he could just give the exams, and then the certification will follow. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the college, but it's industry.
Yeah.
And you do it wide enough, you could get a lot of schools to bank it.
That's been the conversation that we've had about it, and I've actually talked to Patrick about this as well. And you said hackathon, that we've talked about hackathon probably four or five different times, but I think the way forward really is a small dual enrollment program that's district wide. That kids can be a part of with two or three scheduled events, hack events that happen throughout the course of the year, and really, really sell it. You use the word academy. I think that's probably a good representation. You know, that this is this unique, special thing that if you want to be a part of it, only six kids from every high school are going to be able to, you know, really make it this exclusive thing. Because I think if you did something like that, you might be able to get that four, five, or six kids from every school, and now you're hitting that 20 mark. But it'll take work. And I know Saddleback's willing to do the work. IBC may be the better school, actually, to partner with in that regard. But, you know, get one of their folks to be a part of that on a regular basis, maybe even be the instructor for a dual enrollment version of it. But
they get that facility untested. It just mm-hmm. No one's there.
Gary's going after that.
Unless
facility.
You put, tell you. Unless it's going to be ours. There, it's like, so you just got this really nice facility and empty spaces. It's, yeah. Like, it's a shame. Yeah. And yeah. It's all built for that. Yeah.
And if we get some funding out of the CCAP grant that we're getting ready to write, that could be the seed money maybe to start looking to bring that back the following year. We could get all the curriculum, everything lined up, ready to go next year, and then relaunch the following year if we get the funds to support it.
What I talked to Chris about was a symposium. I think you need something to let parents know what exactly we're doing in education, because even I sit on boards, and it's still kind of a mystery as to, all right, so I got taxes going here, and I got to go over here, and yet they seem to overlap, but no one really says anything like that. Yeah. And to have a summit about dual enrollment and what this actually does for the state of California and how much less money you can spend as a parent on college education, which is ridiculous at this point. Right. I mean, it just keeps getting, and next year it's going to get more expensive for this stuff. So I think we're a solution. We're like, you know, helpers.
And this is such an integral part of the conversation, you know, sitting here. Yeah, I just talked with a college counselor today. I said, is it still true it's taking kids about 6 years to get their degree? She goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, unbelievable. So on a side note, I have a PTA mom, Dana, who her story is so gnarly. So she works for a big time corporation now. But as a kid, she hacked into everything, right? So she was so high level and everywhere that, and her dad's a highly placed person, the FBI came to her door and instead of arresting her, made her for like 7 years be a white hat hacker for them. And she works for, oh my gosh, I forget, she's amazing. Now, so she has that whole trajectory there. So there are folks like her out there. She was living in Irvine when she did that, and they came to our door. But I think this is exciting stuff, right? So this is vision stuff, you know. You're right about the money, but this is, I think, where we can capture them. And maybe deeper conversations, you could probably even talk with Patrick or work and see where he's seeing, you know, where he might come in, because I don't know him. I guess he was there when my kids were there, I'm not sure. But his name always comes up around everything.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah. He's a great guy. And I think long term, and this is me just throwing it out there, you know, a lot of our programs, I won't say a lot, but we have several programs get a little long in the tooth and aren't necessarily reflecting where the future is. You know, we don't have an AI program, but we've got, you know, three, and don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting we do anything, but we've got three amazing culinary programs. But in terms of, you know, earning potential and down the road, you know, at some point, you know, you got to start really looking at, you know, what do you continue and what do you not necessarily scrap, because that's negative, but, you know, what do you morph something into that's actually going to take kids on into the future? And I think those are tough conversations to have with schools, because they love some of those programs. But, you know, to Gary's point, and, you know, all of our points, right, we want kids to be positioned to make the best living that they can make using 21st century skills. And we don't necessarily teach 21st century skills.
We definitely come a long way. When I first was on the board and CCA, there was flower arranging. Mm-hmm. Hey, that comes in handy. But
yeah,
I do know my friends.
Travel arranging.
Yeah, I mean, and again, big bucks. Too few, right? When you get yourself, you know, you have to be that person to the stars, and it's still a shit job. So.
Exactly.
Okay,
we have two more just want to talk about. So Mr. Self is our Auto Academy teacher at San Clemente High School. So Mr. Self has told us that he is going to move to Montana on 50 acres and become a mountain man with him and his two boys and his wife. So they've had a house up there for a couple years. It's a beautiful place. He was showing me some pictures this weekend. I'm so jealous. It's so beautiful. But he's leaving at the end of the year, and being who he is, he's doing a great job of taking care of the program and setting it up for success. We just got a new clerk down there, so we talked to the Partnership Academy folks at the conference, and they're willing to come down and actually do a sit-down with the new teacher, with the new clerk, to make sure they are absolutely crystal clear on all the requirements and how to do everything. That said, Sean took on the After Bell, one of the two After Bell sections of Auto this year, because Doug Mack at Elisa last year
got a full-time 6/5 during the day from the school.
Okay.
So we transferred that to Sean. So he's had it for 1 year. So the, what we're planning to do is, first of all, we're going to find a new teacher to replace him, a tech, which is going to be tough, but we'll get it done. But bringing somebody brand new into that situation and running not only a high-flying auto program, but an academy and all the extra work that goes with the academy, layering on an automatic afterbelt program for that person too, okay, is asking a little much. So we're going to transfer that to Capitol Valley, where we have the second of the afterbelt auto classes, and we're going to dual roster the section so the kids can continue through and become pathway completers, and we'll still have a two-course sequence in place. And then when the person at San Clemente gets on their feet, should they want to bring it back, then we can split it back out. But in the interim, until we get everybody settled, we're going to collapse that into one dual rostered section instead of two. So while it is a loss, again, it's not going to be loss of opportunity for kids because they can still go to Capo to capture that after bell section.
So those classes are full.
Those are full. Auto's always full. Yep.
And are we keeping pace to talk about an industry that's changing so exponentially?
We are, I mean, it's electric, right? So we have electric trainers at each one of our schools. They're big old kit cars. They're half as big as these two tables together. The kids tear them down. They build them. They talk about electric. It's in the curriculum. Sean has, last time, I guess, three Priuses. I think he's got three Priuses that the kids work with, right? We're treading lightly and slowly. Not because the market's not there, but from a safety standpoint really making sure the shops are outfitted appropriately, because
that'll
kill a kid, will kill a kid. Yeah. So we've got to be really, really specific to get there and to do a full, I don't know that we ever want to do a full electrical conversion to a shop, but even to do a partial conversion and have all of the electrical equipment that you really need to do that, it's going to be a major overhaul of all three labs. Yeah.
So, Rivian and those types of companies, you know, we can reach out and have a direct dialogue about what our needs are.
We can definitely talk to them. I hear Rivian's in trouble.
They're in trouble.
But yes.
They still sit on a lot of cash.
Sure, absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Fisker, same thing.
Tesla, Fisker. I actually got on the thing for a Fisker when it comes out because I love that car. We have enough companies here that we can certainly find some folks to be partners with us when we start looking at doing some sort of a serious move into electric, for sure. Yeah. And then Aliso, just to throw it in, this is a little bit of a side, but Aliso, Doug Mack's retiring as well. So our auto teacher there. So two of our three auto positions we're going to have to redo. So we're real good.
So is Aliso the fifth?
Finding unicorns.
One, two, three, four. This is the fifth section that you're ready
for? No. We're not doing anything. I'm just letting you know he's leaving. And we actually do have a person lined up for that.
Oh, okay.
So that one's, that's just
that
a side.
Okay.
Just want to throw that. It's not a CCA program, but it's wrapped up in our auto support for our program. Okay, so that's just going to be a reduction of one section, but we're going to dual roster the other so kids still have the opportunity.
Okay.
And then the last one we have, Ms. Brown, she's at our adult campus. So she's going to pick up the ELL healthcare program, the new program that's funded through our consortium. So that gives her one too many classes. So we've got to pull back so that she's not running in overtime every single week. So we'll reduce her medical tech class by one. But she's adding, so that's why there's an add. So it's really, in terms of numbers, it's a net zero, but it's converting from what she's currently doing to the specific EL adult adult class for her. So those are the six.
Funding, right?
That's got specific dedicated funding just for that. So that's the total of six. Yeah. And it's spread out across. So we tried to make sure that we weren't going to overburden any one particular school. We tried to make sure we weren't going during the day at any more schools than we needed to try to lighten the load as much as possible so nobody felt picked on or, you know, getting less than or anything like that. So that's the sum total of what I have on the table right now, which will net us the $600,000 that we need to stave off the cash flow problem with a little fudge factor because of change in benefits. You never quite know what's going to happen. Like I said, they dropped the 23% on us in the middle of the year this year, so we have to be ahead of that. And then it gives us an additional $300,000 that is coverage, so that we actually can start building a true set-aside reserve, and we can cover, you know, those weird things that just happen from time to time.
So is that reflected on, not to jump ahead, but is that where on page 63?
From the salaries?
Yeah, the salaries, the 386 under...
Well, I don't have the new one. I know where you're talking about.
Or I can wait until we get to your thing.
But yeah, it's reflected in the 1,000s and the 2,000s on...
Okay, yeah, 1,000 and 1,999.
Yep.
And then the other one was...
The 2,000s for the CGSs.
Yeah, the 608,000.
Yes. Okay.
So that's the sum total of what our plan would be to get us to the point where, like I said, we have the money that we need to cover our shortfalls for next year, and it puts us on a trajectory to be able to begin to save a little bit of cash each year so that we get more and more able to stand on our own 2 feet. And I mean, my long-term goal I would love to see would to have $3 or $4 million in a true set-aside so that the state can do whatever they want to us for a year, and it doesn't affect any of our programs. And that will take several years to get there. But this is a good way to begin to start things in that direction. Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments or?
Well, so this is your proposal.
Yes, ma'am.
We didn't have any competition. And so what do you need from us? Nothing. I mean, you can go ahead and do that and make those changes. We're all done with it, right?
I just wanted to lay all that out for you guys, so if you did want me to look in a different direction, or if you really felt strongly against something that I was throwing out there that you didn't feel was in the best interest of the organization, I wanted to have that opportunity to have you guys give that to me so that we can investigate. If that doesn't exist, then...
You got to do that 10%.
I'm sorry, yeah.
10% is what you're...
10% additionally from what we historically have, yes.
And is that, I mean, not to jump ahead, but is that the 7,100 to 7,500 category? Is that like the 1.2 million? Is that that 10%?
1.2 would be the pass-through number from the district.
Yeah. It's the 7,000, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Seems like it's been done in a very thoughtful way.
We tried. Nobody likes to cut, and yeah. I like cutting in the classrooms least of all. And
even though it looks like we have had an increase from the first to second interim, which we're not on that agenda item, we've never had this much money before. We've just got this conundrum coming because of I'm reading this, and I feel like all our grants are stabilized and everything. So this is proposals for things that might happen.
No, it's stuff that's here.
Okay.
So while yes. For example, our K-12 Strong Workforce Grant, we got more money from that than we've ever gotten before.
Right. That's where I get so bamboozled.
But we look back, and if we look at this, in 2016, just our salaries for admin, instruction, and support staff was 1.5. Mm-hmm. Just salaries now, we're at 3.5. Mm-hmm. So the escalation of salaries and benefits are what's driving this. So yes, we get more money, but our expenses are outpacing our ability to get more money.
Okay.
And if we're not able to curb our expenses, again, so core foundational money, CTIG, pass-through, and 500,000 of adult ed, right, gets us in that just 5.2, right around in there, right? If we're not relatively close to that number for salaries and benefits, we're rolling the dice against our grants. And if something were to happen to us, it literally would be catastrophic. And that makes me nervous for all of our faculty and all of our kids, because that would be losing multiple programs like mid-year. That would just be a disaster for the schools. So to not have that happen, paring down to where we're close to that core amount for our salaries and benefits puts us in a position to then let K-12 do what K-12 does, and it won't impact us terribly. And honestly, over the next 3 or 4 years, from what we're seeing in projections and what the state keeps telling us, things are going to keep going down. CTIG, we've lost $200,000 over the course of 3 years in CTIG. Mm-hmm. And Pete Callis stood up and said, you know, their goal is to fund every single LEA in the state with CTIG. Well, if they do that, we're going from $3 million to $2 million like that.
Right.
And now we have another, $1 million gap to deal with. So instead of just chasing all of this stuff, if we get ahead of it a little bit so that we kind of contain our costs to be a little bit more fiscally, I don't want to say fiscally responsible because it makes it sound like we haven't been responsible, which we have been. But if we don't plan for the future, we're going to get caught blindsided. And that makes me nervous for the organization.
I get it.
Yeah. All right, there's no other?
Shall we move on?
Okay.
Item number 7.
All right, great, thank you. Sorry, that was a little long.
Item number 8, second interim report. Sorry about that.
All right, so that's my turn. We'll give Paul a little break. My pleasure to present to you, our esteemed board members, for your consideration, College and Career Advantages, second interim reporting, budget update for current fiscal year 23-24. And as I like to say, everything that I'm about to highlight is in this lovely 63-page SACS report, and then it's summarized in the 4-page memorandum, and I'm going to say it in about 2 pages. But I'll just go over what I believe are the highlights. Let's see, the updates at this second interim reporting reflects information available to CCA staff through January 31st for fiscal year 23-24. And Paul has already explained to you what is in the projected subsequent 2 years of information. I'm going to mostly be talking about what's going on in the current year budget. I believe most important for you to note for consideration is the projection of financial conditions, which is actually the second to last section of the memorandum. And it is reporting that staff is projecting that CCA will be in a positive financial position for fiscal years 23-24, 24-25, and 25-26. Other items to highlight would be that the updated projected overall current budget for this year has increased by a little, increased with revenue to be over a little over $8.6 million, with expenses to be projected now to be about $9.3 million, thus utilizing the $683,000 of our little over $3 million beginning fund balance, which includes the 22-23 carryover and reserves, still resulting in a projected ending fund balance of a little over $2.3 million, which is where we've promised that we're going to be.
That's the required MOU that we have with the district.
The revenue changes from adopted budget to current budget netted a little over $1.8 million, and this is including a decrease of our career technical education incentive grant, CTIG, of a little over $160,000, and adding a new K-12 Strong Workforce Program grant for grants for round 6 that totaled over a little over $1.9 million. Expenditures increased by a little over $1.8 million based on actuals and mostly to match the revenue that we got from the K-12 Strong Workforce grants. Salaries increased by a little over $390,000. Benefits went up by $260,000, which matched with the salaries go up, the benefits go up. services and operating expenses went up by about $287,000. Capital outlay went up by $164,000. Pass-throughs of that money that we are getting went up, or decreased by $39,000 for the CTIG grant and increased by $486,000, netting $447,000 And as I like to kind of remind you that on the SACS report, because the COVID supplemental funding, that balance that was $2.7 million to start off the year is considered restricted funds, so it doesn't carry over year to year. But we are utilizing in this budget $687,000 of that, so that it looks like on the SACS report that we're deficit spending because we're using that reserve that's not part of the unrestricted funding. However, we're still keeping the $2 million in COVID that we've been planning on, and we'll keep that at the end of the year, and it's still projected to keep for the next subsequent years as well. And that we're going to end up at, right now we're showing that we're going to keep $326,000 in unrestricted. That will increase at the end of the year when everything finals out at unedited actuals based on what we actually spent. But because of those restricted reserves, it also annoyingly doesn't calculate with when we're trying to figure out the amounts of our reserves that we're supposed to be keeping, because they would like to keep us at 5%. Granted, everybody other districts are at 3%. We like to try and get at 5%. We are showing that we're at 3.26%, but on the SACS report, the unmet, it says not met because it's not at 5%. We were at 1.95% last year, so we are increasing. We're just not quite there yet, but we're still trying to get there by the, over the time, which is what he was talking about, trying to keep something more in reserve to get to the 5 to 10% that we are aiming for. And in June, like I said, I'll be we'll be providing the updates on estimated actuals when we talk about the budget adoption based on data through the end of April. As I reviewed here today, CCA is projecting to have positive certification for 23-24 and the two subsequent fiscal years. If you have any questions, feel free to let me know. But it is at this time that we recommend that the governing board approve College and Career Advantages second interim reporting for fiscal year 23-24 as presented. Thank you.
I'll move approval.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Oh, wait, here is a question.
I'm sorry. I guess I never really thought about this. Does this go to the state or the county?
Goes to county and then it goes up
the
county.
Yeah. School board then.
Yeah, so exactly. It's the exact same software that they use, and it goes to the OCDE, and they look it over and they approve it, and then they send it up to the CDE.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Yeah, 9 got pulled.
Yeah, so we pulled 9, so.
10.
I've enclosed enrollment data for this year with a comparison from last year for you guys to review. I don't see anything except D.
That's a real difference.
That was, and you know what? It's because Kelly, I just usually send it over because I don't have access to your ARI system, and mm-hmm. Kelly sent it back, but what happens is we double the numbers because we count the first semester as one semester class, second, and I didn't double the numbers. So doubling the numbers, you guys are actually up, because the same thing, when I looked at it again, I went, oh, shoot, they should be up because we added another section during the bell. Yeah. So
I was really happy to see these new numbers because that's one of our goals.
Yes.
To have it.
Yeah, you're asking you're up about 50 more. So that's even more than one whole class. So yeah, so the numbers look pretty good. If you have any questions about any of the numbers.
So do remember, guys, when we do report, CTIG lets us report first semester as a standalone, second semester as a standalone, so it increases our number. So when you see things, you see like 16,000 kids. We don't really have 16,000 kids. We have like 8, right? So it's done that way. So we try to be consistent, but we all internally know that usually our numbers are, I don't want to say inflated because that's not true, but it's reflective of how we get our money. Yeah.
They're duplicated.
Yours should have been duplicated and they weren't. So
okay.
We
could you speak a little bit about how Short Cliffs went up so much?
Short Cliffs
from the 46 to 166.
That's the one we built the kitchen at.
Yeah.
I think
it's Josh's school.
So my guess that was the culinary
that
class.
Culinary probably got and not
probably the teacher is what Brian Campbell's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's a good teacher.
Very popular teacher.
Very popular.
The kitchen is all redone.
Yeah, she's only got a part-time schedule though. I think they really their big high-flying program is their music program.
Yeah, with and, Mr. Reed.
Yeah, he's dynamic. They put him in that new big old room,
good.
And I think he
has a new room.
They put him in the art room, that big old double room they had down on the end on the other side of the hall.
They don't have art anymore.
Yeah, but I think that's allowed him to offer a few new sections, and now they can blow his numbers up because he's in that. It's basically a triple room.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
So they didn't add any programs because they're under declining enrollment, just like the rest of us. Yeah. But we've got a CTI lab over there. We've got the kitchen, and then we have the commercial music program. So those are the three CTE labeled programs that we have available for kids, and they're the same ones we had last year. So they had to have just offered some additional sections. But I need to follow up specifically with Josh, the principal, to find out a specific answer to your question.
Yeah, because that's helpful for us to know what makes us want to sign up.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, you can't have enough culinary classes. We had so many, I mean, yeah. talk about how we can get cybersecurity, yeah. but we had to bring on another teacher.
God, I hated cooking.
And they had to turn away.
Sewing, like,
we
really, that's my life.
Kids on a waiting list.
It is my life.
You just can't have sections, yeah.
But yeah, no, it's very, very, very cute. On a side note, we just had our honors concert, and the data point was we had 40% more middle school kids try out. So hopefully, as Gary has pointed out to me, you know, the arts took such a hit in COVID, and to see, because our high schools are some of our way down with our music. And so that's really bodes well. So yeah. That's great. Good.
Statewide at the conference, they put up some numbers. CTE pathway completers at the high school are full 15% more likely to graduate high school statewide as a state number. And it gradiates down. The same thing with attendance. They're a full 10%. Their attendance rates are 10% higher than their non-CTE counterparts. They call them dabblers. So that's somebody that just takes a class here or there.
Yeah, isn't a completer. Yeah, they're being slot in why they're counselors.
Even those kids are 5-8% higher in attendance. And similarly in graduation rates.
So just, that's the only reason they're at school.
Yeah, that's 100%. Yeah. That's the thing that they love.
Well, in talking to kids about culinary, they're just so excited because of all the cooking shows.
I follow them on Instagram, and I have to admit, they make me hungry.
Yeah. Well, you can't walk in Dana and not know exactly what she's cooking.
Yeah.
As soon as you hit the front door, I mean, she fills the rotunda up immediately with whatever's going on.
What do we offer at Cal Prep?
I'm sorry?
What do we offer at Cal Prep?
What classes do we have at Cal Prep?
Digital photography.
Just a couple.
Digital photography and
cybersecurity.
Yeah. But they have... availability to all the After Bell classes as well, so any kid can take those.
Video and digital are usually the two that we have there.
So you have two classes and one class After Bell?
For Cal Prep?
Yeah.
Those are just the kids that participate in our other classes. So the After Bell stuff, those are, so for Cal Prep, they may go to their regular, you know, their online classes, and they take maybe digital photography during the day, but then there's 10 of them that are taking something regionally After Bell.
What school they're and what their schedules look like, right? I don't remember the exact numbers now because I've been away from it too far, but they can take so many at Cal Prep and still take, you can take one or two at your local high school. So this is majority of that group of kid that's taking a class at their local high school.
Should we move on to item 11, program planning, Kim?
Lisa is getting late. We got to go.
Dinner. Yeah, I know. I'm tired to you guys. So I'll go quickly through this. I'll just go through the highlights. But each year we do program planning where we meet with the principals. And I think I've mentioned this before to you right at the last one. But this is what we finally settled on. So this is what it looks like. Anything that's, you know, being moved or changed or added or deleted. Or it's on a, it looks like this. So the highlights are, I would say that we are going to be offering at Capitol Valley a dual enrollment during the Bell Auto class. We're working on that one. Fashion is moving over from Capitol Valley After Bell to Dana Hills, so she can specifically collaborate with a theater teacher there and help with having a costume design class, is what we're thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very excited at Dana to have that.
Yep.
Also, the culinary, we're looking to add dual enrollment there at Dana Hills for culinary. Laguna Beach is actually funding an adult vet tech program. So,
and how did that come about? Why was that chosen?
So Laguna Beach has extra money to fund adult programs, but they don't really have the space.
They get consortium money, same as we do, so they're spending their consortium.
Sometimes they come to us and they just say, hey, is there something you would like, is there something we can offer? And we kind of just talk about it, what about this, what about that? And this just came up as very, very much interested. We also looked at the numbers of kids that were in classes from Laguna and what they might like going forward. And fashion is one, and vet tech is another one. So we thought, let's try
the little dogs. little purse dogs.
I think I had spoken with Paul about, we have a group of students that's really interested in the business entrepreneurial, like that they have at Aliso Viejo.
Have it at Chisora. entrepreneur cap that that.
Yeah.
Well, we do have one after belt. We have one after belt too that everybody can take. And I don't know how many of your kids. I'd have to look and see how many Laguna kids are in there.
Right.
You guys
there were transportation issues. They were interested in having it.
Yeah. Proximity at Dana helps.
Yeah.
But having fashion over there will help in proximity with them. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. And every year we talk about something else that's just happened to be. We had a teacher that was able, all the things lined up, all the cards lined up for that to happen this year. So, you know, we can revisit next year again. So every year we do it. So, and they're talking about adding another level to the emergency services pathway during the bell with Brian Carver over there at Lagoon Beach. Some of the things we're doing is we're adding classes, but we're dual rostering such that kids can get pathway completion and continue on to classes that are a good fit for that. So, for instance, kids that do video, you can do video for 4 years, and you could put an advanced in with a new, and they will just be doing advanced projects, so it works out. We did that with game design, and we're doing that with esports. We're adding a second level. During the same class period.
We're able to shift a section from accounting, which was at Tesoro. They were running a zero period accounting class, but the numbers changed a little bit, so we're able to work with the administration. We're just going to convert that section into an esports section during the day, so their kids can get
into that. Why didn't want to do accounting, but they want to do esports? That's
I don't know. History. Yeah, we've been chewing on that.
They wanted accounting.
Oh my gosh, they've got... Craig Cunningham.
Craig Cunningham?
Yeah, it's like, he's got to teach a zero period and six period.
When I was doing the schedule over there,
right. You were
the two most requested classes in that building, accounting and ceramics.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they're going to make a bank doing accounting and they want something to do on their downtime.
To decompress.
They're going
to
make a piggy bank.
I saw a statistic yesterday, actually. It's not in Orange County, but some neighboring area in California, there are 3 vet techs for every 500,000 people. And that's not enough.
Not enough.
So I can see that being a huge opportunity for those kids.
Better to be the actual veterinarian. Since they make bang.
It's a good first step, though.
Get them
hooked. Get them hooked into that lifestyle and that career path. Yeah. Yep, for sure. And our teacher's phenomenal. She's
wonderful.
Dynamite. She's dynamite.
Well, I had actually talked to a couple students who were interested in that, but also didn't have transportation.
And then the last thing that I think is a pretty good highlight is the EMT class is going to be moving over to San Juan Hills, and they're going to just see if it fills to run during the day, and if it does, then he'll swap out one of his sports medicine sessions. But the afterbelt class will be moving to San Juan Hills. So the other thing that when we go to meet with the principals, one of the things they always say is, how come we don't have any afterbelt classes on our campus? And why does Capitol Valley have them all?
Right.
It's not necessarily that Capitol Valley has them all, but they have the adult campus there. So when we move from our campus, it seems like they have a lot more. So it really isn't. It's nice because we're able to now bring back one to San Juan Hills and bring back an afterbelt to Dana Hills. So we're sort of spreading the love a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nothing else? Yeah, if you guys have any questions on any of this?
Motion
adjourned.
Second. Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you. Good job.